Blog Talk Radio.
To be the man, you gotta beat the man. You wanna find out how good you are? You're looking at the mantra's shit. Let's go hook him up!
Edition of Over the Top Radio. I am your host, Ed, in San Antonio, and I'm joined by my co-host, Craig. What's going on, Craig?
Hey, Ed, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing pretty good. It's a cold, wet night, but trying to keep warm inside.
Gotcha. Same here.
And we got our other co-host on the line, Katrina. What's going on, Katrina?
Not much.
Okay. I guess it's a typical evening for Katrina.
Drunk?
What's it to you?
Nothing.
Cool. Well, I guess it's, I know Craig's probably going to be mad and complaining that I ignored his topics again, but actually I didn't. We'll just do your topics after WrestleMania, since I just wanted to keep it like WrestleMania themed until we get to WrestleMania, so...
I'm not upset at all. I just had some good topics, and I've got some good guests nailed down, and you kind of gave me the rundown for the rest of the time up until WrestleMania. So I'll just put everything on hold. No worries.
Well, if you can,
I was so let down early this morning when I saw that I had misinterpreted what Ed said when Lance was going to be on.
Yeah. Yeah, that's too bad.
Yeah, I know.
Did you know that
you actually thought I booked Edge on the show?
Well, I figured if you had gone through Lance, maybe you could have gotten something done. So.
Yeah, well, I thought about asking Lance to call him a favor, but I didn't want to be too much of a dick.
You know that you wrote on the Figure Four site when you were, you know, setting up the show, you wrote Over the Top Radio. It says number 13, the WWE Hall of Fame. But you originally wrote Over the Top Radio number 13. By the way, I'm pretty sure we've done more than 13 shows. And then the Wii Hall of Fame has to be your biggest and funniest goof ever.
I thought it was going to be a video game show. I was pissed off.
I don't know what you're talking about. It says WWF if you look at it right now.
Yeah, I know, but then look at it. It also says number 13.
Yeah, I didn't notice that when I edited it the first time. I don't know what the hell happened with my kid. Okay, I fucked up on the WWE, but that was my keyboard that forgot to put in a number on the number.
Right.
I don't screw up numbers. I only screw up letters.
We're not running down our favorite Geico commercials today with a little pig. No.
Those are pretty cool commercials, though.
I love those.
My in the thread thought it was going to be about midgets.
Yeah.
I had just woken up and had just gotten high, so I just wasn't on my game when I did that. And yeah. Oh, well. Anyway, everything's fixed or will be fixed, so
Sure.
Continue with the show here. And that is since me and Craig will be at the Hall of Fame this year, and
yes.
We were last year, and
yes.
A few other times.
That.
We will be
year
talking about
that.
The WWE Hall of Fame, which
and
is depending on who you talk about to the Hall of Fame, you're either going to have a funny laugh about it or get into an argument, because it's just a Hall of Fame in name, because, you know, as a true definition of a Hall of Fame, it's, there's basically no standards, I guess, for this Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you guys could describe it better or not.
It's just who they want. Who's gonna?
Yeah, but yeah, basically who they want. Yeah.
I'm fine with. I don't care. I don't take this shit that seriously. So
yeah,
not a big deal.
I put much more stock into Dave's Hall of Fame than I do the WWE Hall of Fame.
They do it for marketing purposes and all that, and
absolutely.
You know,
and who's in town?
I don't knock them for that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's
yeah.
All right.
I enjoy
it. It's not like they claim. Like it's not like they themselves don't take it overly serious. So, you know, why
should I enjoy it? Because sometimes it's like the last time we get to see some of these guys. So that's pretty cool.
That is true.
Yeah, and there's usually some really good stuff on. I know Craig's fallen asleep at one or two, but there's usually some really good stuff on some of these.
It was
things.
Just the one. Thanks. It was just the one.
Okay.
And
well,
as much as people don't want to think so, I mean, I do legitimately think like it's like a good show of appreciation for some of these guys. So.
I mean, it's a good feel-good moment. I mean, like, Coco Beware, you know, he had a long career. He doesn't have, like, a lot to show for it, but at least for one night he was like, you know, I'm sure they treated him like a king backstage and for him to go out in front of a big audience and everything. I'm sure that, you know, meant a lot to him, you know.
Probably got him more money on the indie circuit doing matches.
I'm sure he
did that for
I'm
a
sure
lot of these
did.
Guys.
Yeah, that's the year I fell asleep. it was during Cowboy Bill Watts' 30-minute tirade.
That was an awesome speech, too. How do you fall asleep during that?
I was tired.
Everything.
I had just come from my second ROH show and I was tired. I don't know. I just fell asleep.
Practice. I don't know.
I was sleepy.
We'll talk about Craig's flaws at another date.
Yes,
but,
please.
We'll go ahead and start. And they started out perfectly because they started off with one induction and it was probably the best induction they could have made at the time. And then that was Andre the Giant, which is, even though he's been dead for so long, Andre the Giant still might be worldwide. Worldwide might still be the most famous wrestler of all time.
Yeah. I'll agree. I mean, everybody knows Andre. Or at least heard of him.
Yeah. And I know I got to see him before he wasn't at his prime anymore. But, I mean, I remember when he could actually still move around in the early 80s and late 70s and stuff. It was actually kind of pretty sad by the end there, you know, when he couldn't move. But
he's doing jobs to the Warrior in 30 seconds.
Yeah, almost had a heart attack because of the snake on top of him and stuff. It was kind of a sad end for, like, a great career, but, I mean, I remember he would come to World Class, like, you know, once or twice a year or whatever. And I remember I used to get really excited when he was coming to town, that's for sure.
I get to see him work under the hood with the machines a couple of times. But, you know, when people are talking about watching wrestling when they're a kid, people our age, they usually throw out Hulk Hogan's name and then right behind it is Andre the Giant, if not him first. So there's no reason why he shouldn't be in.
Yeah. And as much, I still think he might have the all-time greatest performance of any wrestler in the movie. I mean, he was awesome in The Princess Bride.
Yeah, he was really good in that.
Yeah.
And I still think, you know, Andre against Hogan at WrestleMania, I still think it's probably the most famous, biggest match of all time. for me anyway.
Oh yeah, that match when it, I went out of my way to, you know, find that on, you know, VHS when it came out, and you know we didn't have, you know, on demand or anything back then, so you just kind of had to wait for the tapes to come out. But you know, I hunted it down and plopped down good money for it when it came out, because I had to have it.
Yeah, I mean, it probably is the most famous, like, pro wrestling match, at least in North America, for sure, if not the world, you know. I mean, it really is.
I'd probably say the only other, like, really famous wrestling match would maybe be Montreal.
Yeah.
Just because of the finish and everything that went on there. So.
Yeah.
It was probably Andre's last great match before he passed away, I would imagine.
Yeah, this would, I mean, well, you know, most people would say it was a horrible match, but it had enough going for it that it was, I didn't think it was that bad, aside from the Phantom headbutt into the post.
Well, he almost hit it. He kind of leaned against it, but yeah, it was fine.
Yeah, he was. I mean, I loved Andre so much that I chose him over, or Hogan, when they did feud. So I actually, that was actually the first time I ever cheered for a heel was Andre in that feud.
And that's war when they signed that match and said, it's over for Hulk Hogan. And he can't beat Andre. It's Andre. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll never forget when he choked him that one, or like, no, when he choked that baseball announcer, Bob Uecker.
Bob Uecker?
Yeah. That's like one of the all-time funniest WrestleMania moments is when he fucking choked him. Like, that was awesome.
Yeah.
So we'll go to the next class here, which is 84. And 84, 94. They...
94.
They what?
Stone. 94.
94, that's what it says.
No, you said 84.
Oh, well, 94. All right. Well, the first one on the list here is Arnold Skolin. And actually, the only thing I know of Arnold Skolin was when I started watching wrestling, Bob Backlund was a champion, and he was Backlund's manager, which was weird because at the time, I think Bob Backlund was the only babyface who had a manager. I mean, it was like the total opposite. It's like I always thought that was kind of weird. And he'll be best known for throwing in the towel when the Iron Sheik had Bob Backlund in the camel clutch. And before the match, they were doing the Iron Sheik had those big clubs that it was some kind of challenge that you had to wave them around your head.
Yeah.
And Backlund was doing it, and the Iron Sheik hit him in the back, so his back was hurt. So he was hurting in the camel clutch, but wouldn't give up. And Arnold Skolin threw in the towel, which ended that era of the WWF at the time, it was, even though it had changed before, and started the new era because instead of getting a rematch, it was Hulk Hogan who came in quickly and defeated the Sheik and set the WWF off in a whole new direction.
I never fan of Bob Backlund. Just boring.
I thought he was all right. I enjoyed him at the time. I thought I liked him a lot more when he went fucking batshit crazy and started wearing, like, suits and bow ties and just out of his mind.
The only thing I liked about that gimmick is the Backlundisms that he would spout off when, you know, he would be cutting his promos and he'd be talking about body parts much like Gorilla Monsoon and throwing big words that went way over my head that all seemed to make sense.
Talking about all the plebeians in the audience?
Yes. He was nuts, but got a good match out of, well, actually, I shouldn't say that. Bret Hart got a good match out of him.
To go back to Skolin, he was basically, I don't think he was anything more than a mid-card or journeyman really wrestler for the majority of his career, but I think he was actually a partner with Vince Senior,
I think he was one,
or
like with Gorilla and them when in Capital Sports.
Yeah,
I think he's one of those that had like a job for life or something.
Yeah, he had like a job for life, and I'm not sure he's even alive today, but if he is, I'm sure they still take care of him. I'll never forget Bobby Heenan just making fun of him at that when he got inducted. That was pretty funny.
Yeah. I think he also managed Bruno maybe during Bruno's second run as champion. I'm not sure.
Maybe. I mean, it was weird that they had like that. I guess maybe to make the champion look important, he needed a manager. You know what I mean?
Yeah. He passed away in 2007, by the way.
Oh, well, that sucks. But,
yeah.
Yeah, he was an older guy. And but we'll go to the next one. The next one is... the next one's a guy who's like deserves to be in Dave's Hall of Fame, but I really don't think he was really in the WWF all that much for him to be nominated that in this early in the creation of the Hall of Fame, and that's Bobo Brazil, who was just this giant black guy, who did all the typical, stereotypical black wrestlers' moves at the time, the headbutts, and, you couldn't hurt him. If you tried to slam his head in the turnbuckle, you couldn't hurt him. And he could always get out of the headlock by shaking around and, stuff like that. But he's actually pretty famous because he's probably the first black guy to actually become a main eventer, and a main eventer in a lot of places where black people weren't main eventers, and if they were lucky, they were even allowed in the balcony of the building at the shows.
Yeah, I never saw his Bobo Brazil.
Yeah, I have nothing. I never saw him wrestle.
I think he's considered maybe the first black world heavyweight champion. Even though they said Ron Simmons, but he held a version of the world title at one point.
Yeah, and he's also famous for feuding with the Sheik for 50 years. And I've only actually seen one match of him, and that was on the Wrestling Go DVD. And
he's probably one of the more famous African-American wrestlers of all time.
On his wiki page, it says, Brazil served as a mentor to wrestler Soul Man Rocky Johnson. So there you go. Had a hand in bringing up the Rock. 6'6", 270 pounds. That's a big man.
How tall was he?
6'6".
6'6", but, nowadays that sounds about average because of, how big everyone in WWE. But at the time when he was in his prime, most people were not that tall or that big. I mean, so he really stood out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then we'll
Speaking
go to...
Speaking of standing out... Speaking of standing out, Nature Boy Buddy Rogers.
Yeah, the original Nature Boy, and who is the inspiration for probably one of the greatest wrestlers of all time, Ric Flair. And he was, I've seen some older interviews with him and stuff like that, and that dude was freaking years ahead of his time. He was so awesome.
Yeah, I just remember seeing, actually saw that match. He beat Pat O'Connor in Comiskey Park in front of 38,000 people for the NWA World title. And I think he had the famous quote. He said, to a nicer guy, it couldn't happen when he won the title.
Yeah, he was. He really came off of that arrogant son of a bitch when he was the champion. And then for his time, he was jacked. He looked like $1 million. And, he was awesome. He's also famous for Lou Dez telling him, we could do this the hard way or we could do this the easy way.
I think it was Sensational Sherry that talked so highly of him in one of the videos I saw, just talking about how much of a beautiful man he was with his blonde hair and tan skin. And 6'2", 227, born in 1921. Died at the age of 71, June 26, 1992.
The first WWF champion.
Yeah, that's true. And basically it was because that's when they basically split from the NWA was when that happened. And stuff. But he's also famous for, didn't he, when he was 70 years old, beat the shit out of somebody at some punk at a restaurant or something?
I don't know. I don't remember.
I have not heard that story.
No, I think that's right. He was 71 years old. He was in some kind of a fight at some place, and he actually beat the shit out of the dude.
Hmm. I remember the last time, I think before he died, he was supposed to be, he was doing a match with, he's going to do a match with the other Nature Boy, Buddy Landell, and in the, you know, the Tri-State promotion in Philadelphia that is like the precursor to ACW that they ran up there? And they were going to do that, but I think the promotion shut down before they had a chance to do that match, so.
Probably a good idea. He probably shouldn't have been in the ring at the time. But he's also famous where he's not a very popular dude. As you know, as influential as he was very disliked. I think a couple wrestlers, and I just can't think of the names right now, actually beat the shit out of him. And maybe even drove him in their like trunk of their car or something. But yeah, he was not a very well liked dude in a lot of places.
Yeah, he had the famous. He used to say this in private, use your friends and be good to your enemies so they'll become your friends and you can use them too. Pretty smart.
Wow. That is a fucking awesome saying. That's
Kevin Nash before his time.
Yeah, no kidding, right? we'll go to the next one, which is Chief J. Strongbow, who is actually an Italian dude doing an Indian gimmick. And when I first started watching wrestling, he was teaming with his brother. Wasn't it like Julian or something?
Jules
Strongbow, and they beat Mr. Fuji and Saito for the tag titles.
Yeah,
and then
Chief J. So I can't really say.
Yeah, he just would do the war dance and for his comebacks, and he was actually like one of the main guys in the WWF for like years and years. The last real thing I really remember him as a wrestler was it was after him and Jules, like Jules had took off or whatever, and he was still doing like opening matches, wrestling guys, and Brutus Beefcake had just come into the WWF. And was doing an interview, and he's trying to look all, jacked up, and then the outfit that he had, whatever. Anyway, so somehow he gets into a confrontation with Jay in an interview, and Jay, I just remember Jay telling him, "I'll be on you like a duck on a June bug." And then they had their match, and basically, you know, he just basically put over Beefcake big time, and that might have been the last time I ever saw him wrestle, but.
Yeah, the only
time
I really saw him later on was when they'd have, like, a big brawl or something, he'd be one of the officials trying to break it up or something like that.
Yeah. Now, I did see him on the Wrestling Go. There's a match. There's a Tiger Shark Cage match where it's him and one of the Fabulous Kangaroos where they put him in one of those tiny, tiny shark cages that they put in the water, and the two of them had a battle inside that tiny contraption, and he even made his war dance comeback somehow, believe it or not,
wow.
In that little area. So it was awesome. It was somehow Vince Russo was booking matches in the 60s and 50s.
The only time I really saw him was a couple of Indian strap matches that he had with Valentine. I saw him on a couple of old Coliseum tapes back in the day. That's all I really knew of the guy, to be honest with you.
Yeah. He was just one of those guys that had a job for life, like Scola.
Yeah.
You want to do the next one, Katrina?
Oh, the next one is Classy Freddie Blassie. He was inducted in 1994. He's definitely one of the most famous of all time. I think he was even more so as like he kind of transcended the wrestling business in a way. You know, I remember him on, what was the show? I think he's like Mary Tyler Moore or something like that. He was on Mary Tyler Moore or something. And I know he's good friends with, like, Regis Philbin. And, but yeah, definitely one of, like, the most famous. I think, really, he had, like, one of the most famous matches in Japan, I think, with Riki Dozan, I believe.
Yeah. In fact, there's actually, like, a funny story. Like, they were making, like, a documentary or something about Riki Dozan, so they sent some reporters to interview Blassie. And, Blassie he was in character during the interview, and he's like, they asked him about Riki Dozan, and he's like, he just went off and started cutting a promo on Riki Dozan, and he goes, "I'll see Riki Dozan in hell," And the reporter goes, "Well, Mr. Blassie, Ricky Dillon is in heaven." And Freddie just gets up and just starts screaming, "He's in hell, I tell you, and I'll kick his ass when I get there." And just, like, scared the hell out of these tiny little Japanese reporters.
The stuff I remember most is the very first wrestling album. He had a song on there, you know, and he just piped up about, you know, breaking some pencil neck geek. And
that was a famous phrase, I think, that he's the one that started that.
He had some of the most awesome outfits. And I mean, he really was styling when he was a manager in the early 80s, the fashion plate, Freddie Blassie.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he always had, like, gold on and, like, just looked super slick. You wouldn't realize it by looking at him at that point that at one point he was, like, the hardest core wrestler in wrestling. I mean, I'm sure
he was the vampire because he would bite people all the time. They had to put a muzzle on him.
Yeah, he chiseled his teeth. So when he could even do more damage when he would bite guys. So they even would put, in like some places, he had to wear like the muzzle. So there's a picture of him with his muzzle. And there's also like a picture of him where he's fighting John Tolis. And he's like biting the shit out of him. And they're both covered in blood and like that. Yeah, he was a hardcore dude when he was a wrestler. He was, like, way ahead of his time as far as that.
And R.E.M. Wrote a song and threw his name in there, too. It's R.E.M.'s Man on the Moon, and it's from Automatic from the People.
Yeah, that was the...
name check, Freddie Blassie.
He did the... Andy Kaufman did the Breakfast with... My Breakfast with Blassie movie.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That was actually pretty cool, man. I had heard about that for so long, and when I saw it, it didn't disappoint.
Yeah, the Man on the Moon song is about Andy Kaufman, and they just have a bunch of name checks in there, and Blassie's one of them.
Yeah.
So there you go.
I remember that. My most favorite memory of Freddie Blassie of all time is going to be probably one of my favorite Raws of all time. And that was when they had the one where Stone Cold had to make his decision if he was with the WWF or if he was with the Invasion or whatever. And, you have the Alliance, you know, Paul Lee and Shane and Stephanie are giving their speeches. And then you have, Bradshaw and Undertaker do their speeches. And then they wheel in, you know, a very old, frail Freddie Blassie who fires up the troops and even stands up and gets everyone fired up for their battle. And that was fucking awesome. I'll never forget that. I had chills when I saw that.
Wasn't that a takeoff of Theodore Roosevelt after Pearl Harbor?
They did a good job because, I mean, that was awesome. That was fucking awesome.
I remember when they brought him back. It was like actually like a few weeks before he died, and they were doing the 3 minutes gimmick, Bischoff was, and he brought Blassie to the arena. And,
that's right.
He said, "Come on, we're going to go down to the ring. I got something for you." He said, "What are you going to do, kill yourself?" "Okay, let's go." And so they go down to the ring, and, you know, they do the 3 minutes. But the Dudleys come out, and then Blassie gets in the microphone, says, "Devon, get the tables." They put them through the tables.
Oh, that was cool.
Oh, Lord. Let me grab the next one.
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, next one was 1994, Gorilla Monsoon, the very first commentator I grew up on. And I know he had a wrestling career, but that's not how I remember him. This man would pull names of body parts out of his keister and throw them up on the throw them up as fact.
The most famous one was the patella.
No,
oh,
the
external
occipital protuberance.
Thank you.
Back of the head.
He was phenomenal. You know, looking back now, he wasn't the greatest announcer ever, but when I was a kid, I thought he was the man.
Yeah, I love Gorilla.
I don't care what anyone says. He was awesome. He was him and Bobby. And him and Jesse, they were awesome.
Of he and Heenan sitting at that primetime set just shooting the shit. and going to clips and stuff. That was the best 2 hours of the week.
And he had those glasses, those like ruby colored glasses, or like, you know what I mean? He was,
yeah.
He always, so my first memory of Gorilla Monsoon is actually, and I had heard of him before because of the magazines, but the first time I really saw him was, I believe it was when John Studd was doing the Body Slam Challenge, and they brought in Gorilla, because, you know, he was big and famous, and Gorilla came in and was kind of like, it was one of those things where he was kind of like about to do it, but then, like, you know, John kind of like fucked him over and stuff, and then they kind of like beat him up. And then after that, that's when I think he became an announcer and stuff. But
he did the thing with Muhammad Ali. Did you ever see the thing with Muhammad Ali?
I saw that after that. I saw that like later.
I think it was like right before they were going to do the Ali and Noki match. So they wanted to do something like in the States. And so they had Ali. And I don't know, Gorilla was like in a squash match and just kind of outclassed his opponent, and Ali took offense to it, so he stood up and took his shirt off, started jawing at him and pointing to him. So he came in the ring and started throwing a couple of punches, and then Gorilla just grabs him, puts him in the airplane spin, and drops him.
yeah, that was a trip when I saw that.
That was much better than what he did with Inoki. Much more entertaining.
Right. And I also know that, I don't know exactly what the story is or what actually happened, but I do know that there was a confrontation between him and Bruiser Brody, and they never brought Bruiser Brody back to New York after that.
When Bobby Heenan inducted him, I don't know if you guys remember this, but Bobby kind of broke down. He was also acknowledged. He was also acknowledged on this is off the Wikipedia page. You remember Bobby was doing commentary on WCW, and actually Tony Schiavone acknowledged that he had passed away, even though he worked for the other team.
Yeah. Cool. I remember his son was a referee. Joey Morello was a referee. He got gunned
by. Oh yeah, Joey Morello.
In 1994, he was a referee in the Andre Hogan match.
He was actually a pretty good referee.
Yeah.
I guess we could go ahead. You want to take the next one, Couture?
Why you got to give the racist to the black guy?
Wow.
That's exactly why.
Oh, okay. James Dudley, inducted by Vince McMahon. It was said that he was the limo driver. I didn't know he was the promoter. It says the first African-American to run a major arena in the United States.
I don't even know what city that was, but I do know, like, he would manage, like, Bobo Brazil, and Bobo would be in, and maybe, like, other, like, if they brought another, like, because you know how they used to bring, they would bring in guys just for, like, Madison Square Garden that really weren't WWF wrestlers, but just, they'd bring them in. I think when they would bring in a black guy, he kind of, like, was the default two manager of them, but,
He played 9 years in the Negro Leagues. And don't yell at me for saying that.
That's what it's called.
It's on the page. Negro League Baseball.
Yeah.
Jeez.
But yeah,
you gotta
be
so darn PC.
He for the most part, he was Vince Sr.'s limo driver. And it's like one of the guys that Vince Sr. told Vince Jr. he had to take care of. And
he worked for Vince Sr.'s what was this, Jess McMahon, who is that? Is that Vince Sr.'s dad or his brother or something?
Maybe it's his dad, because then, like, isn't it actually, like, Vince, like, third generation, basically?
Yeah, I think this was Vince Sr.'s father. He worked with him.
Yeah, so he's been there since the beginning.
Yeah.
Any thoughts on Vince Dudley, Craig?
Says right here on his Wikipedia page, you know, because Kadre sent me the link. Dudley's final appearance with the company was during an episode of SmackDown in February of 2002. According to the storyline, Stephanie McMahon was banned from the MCI Center. In an attempt to get past security, she pushed Dudley in a wheelchair, but was still refused entrance. Following the scene, definitely left the wheelchair, walked to his seat, and watched the show.
I remember that.
Love it. That was cool. They let him do that. Yeah, he's just like, he's the guy that everyone makes the argument why it's not a real Hall of Fame.
Well, after reading all this stuff, I mean, I feel a little bit better that he's in there. I mean, I don't mind it so much. So,
what were you about to say, Couture?
Do what?
You're about to say something, like.
I said, well, after reading all of this, I don't think it's so bad that he's in there.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to say something else.
No.
Yeah, I guess, you know. So, since we don't have a whole lot more to talk about.
Okay, the next one, Antonino Rocca inducted by Diesel. What the fuck is up with that?
They needed a guy.
Jeez.
There is nothing in common between Antonino Rocca and
Diesel. Diesel was a champion at that time, so maybe that's just why they had him. They needed him to do an induction.
Probably. Antonio Rocca is like, he's known as like one of the original high flyers, even though he really didn't do like a lot of high flying, you know, by today's standards, but by that time,
he
was
like
a
head scissors or something like that.
Like monkey flips and scissors and body presses, and he would do like, like Anderson Silva and do like a front kick to the face where he was kind of like slapping the guy, but it wasn't like a knockout blow, but yeah, he would front kick people in the face, and, you know, just to annoy them and stuff. And he was actually a big time draw for his time. I mean, he was a big time draw, and he was also in the famous tag team of. Unfortunately, I can't think of his partner's name right now, but they were involved in like some big, big matches at the time. I mean, he was a big fucking deal in his day.
Thinking of Miguel Perez.
What's that?
As his partner?
Are you his partner, Miguel Perez? So you think?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Okay. See, Wikipedia doesn't fail me all the time. I got a collection of Stampede tapes from back in the day, and there's some of his stuff on there, and that's really the only thing I ever saw of him, to be 100% honest.
Well, he is way, way before our time.
Yeah, that's probably why.
Anything, Couture?
No.
Okay, we'll go. We'll go to the next one, and I did notice that when they inducted Bobo Brazil, Ernie Ladd had done the induction, so now they had Bobo induct Ernie Ladd. And Ernie Ladd is someone that we left off our football show because he's actually one of the most, as far as like you know, having a good career in football, he was actually basically a Pro Bowler. You know, he was around for a long time playing with the Chargers.
Oops.
Yeah, we forgot him on that one. But as far as seeing him wrestle, the only thing I really remember him was for some reason, Magnum TA dropped to him and lost the title to him when he left Mid-South to go to Crockett. And you'd think he'd put someone like a little younger over, but yeah, they had a Ernie Ladd took the tape off his wrist and choked out Magnum TA with it. And beat him right before he left for Crockett.
I remember Fred Armstrong's first championship he ever held was like he won the North American title. He beat Ernie Ladd.
That's right. Yeah, not that long later.
And he played football for the San Diego Chargers, the Houston Oilers, and the Kansas City Chiefs. So.
Yeah, he played for a long time. He was actually, like I said, a big deal in football. But he was also. You know, besides Bobo, he was probably like the next famous black guy.
Yeah.
To be like a main eventer or whatever. And he was also very, very involved behind the scenes before African Americans were involved behind the scenes back then. You know, he was a booker a lot of times in a lot of places. And
he didn't leave many you don't remember many African American bookers. I'm trying to think of one right now.
No.
Other than
Yeah. He's really the only one I could think about. And like I say, I mean, he's actually, I've actually never heard of him being a bad booker. So,
yeah.
You know, I mean, Mid-South, I mean, he, a lot of the parts where he was the main booker was like Mid-South. And Mid-South was actually pretty awesome when he was booking it.
Yeah, he was good friends with, he and Bill Watts were good friends, which, you know, people would probably roll their eyes at, but you know, that's just. Yeah, it's just what I know.
He was on the 70s show, that 70s show.
Was he?
Yeah, it says Ernie Ladd appeared. Yeah, he was on that episode of that 70s show entitled That Wrestling Show. He was in the locker room with The Rock, who was playing his father, Soul Man Rocky Johnson.
That's right.
I think the Hardys were on that show as well.
Shamrock was on it.
That's right. Shamrock was on it. He had the big hair. yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that was a good episode.
It was, actually.
I remember after, I can't remember what year it was. What year was Katrina? Was that 2005?
That sounds about right.
I just remember, you know, they were showing like a bunch of refugees at like Superdome, and Ernie Ladd was always pictured on Yahoo, was right there with them.
Wow. Yeah, it said Ladd owned and operated Big Cat Ernie Ladd's Throwdown Barbecue Restaurant in New Orleans, Louisiana, until August 29th, 2005, when it was destroyed by Hurricane Katrina.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's cool.
He was born in Rabel, Louisiana, which was like 10 miles from where I went to high school. So.
Wow. And by the way, totally off topic. Why am I so hooked on this show called Swamp People?
I don't know.
Because you're white and you're weird.
I, you said Louisiana, and the first thing I thought of was catching alligators. all right, I'm done. Go ahead. Let's continue. I apologize.
Okay. Well, do we have any more on Ernie Ladd?
I remember him. He was the broadcast. He was the commentator for the WrestleMania II Battle Royal with the football players. He was the commentator at. I don't know. I'm sure you guys saw the big event from Toronto, from the big show there, and he was a commentator there. So.
Yeah, he was around for. He was also involved in like the one of the. I don't know if it was the Republican or Democratic Party, but he was involved. He would be at, like, some of these big political events.
Yeah, I'm trying to say they don't have much on anything else he did.
He was friends with, like, George Bush or something, senior.
Yeah, I think I remember. I remember Paul Biden
anyway,
was friends with George Senior.
Oh, what?
Wasn't Paul Bosch friends with George Sr.?
I believe so.
Yeah. They should induct Paul Bosch and get George Sr. to come and do the induction. That'd be a big coup for him.
Right. And, well, Craig, you want to take the next one?
I sure do. Our next one is George the Animal Steel. He was inducted in 1995. He was inducted by one Doink the Clown. George the Animal Steel was one of the very first characters that I was embarrassed of when I was younger.
I was too young to be embarrassed.
You know, there's always something, you know, going on wrestling that you go, oh, please don't let any of my friends catch me watching this. And it was George Steele eating turnbuckles and his green tongue and him looking the way he did.
Wrestling Randy Savage about 500 times.
Yeah, wrestled Savage 100 times, had a feud over Elizabeth. yeah, he was a staple when I was young. And he's pretty well known. I mean... Again, when you say Andre the Giant and you say Hulk Hogan, you know, sooner or later, George the Animal Steel is going to come up.
Yeah, and he was just a bald, very ugly, and very, very, very hairy dude with a green tongue.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like I say, he basically destroyed the turnbuckle for most of the match. And I'll never forget.
He was so
like,
hairy. I was going to say, he was so hairy that oftentimes when he would eat a turnbuckle, he would beat the stuffings out of it, and the stuffings would get caught in his back hair and just hang around for most of the match.
Yeah. He killed the turnbuckle spot for you, though. You knew it was all padding in there.
That's true.
Yeah. But I remember when I first started watching wrestling, they actually let him cut a promo on one of the, they used to let the guys cut promos to promote the show. And he basically, all he said was Madison Square Garden, but it took him 5 minutes to say it. Because he had to, like, syllabalize it. And it was actually, I'm laughing my ass off. But, yeah, not one of the wrestlers to be taken serious as a serious,
I didn't like him in the corner in that Savage Steamboat match. Kind of took it down a little.
Kind of threw the credibility all off.
He actually had one of the better appearances of a pro wrestler in a film when he played Tor Johnson and Ed Wood, which was a pretty famous film at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And an awesome film.
Tim Burton.
I'll never forget just that long, like so many years ago. And I saw, it wasn't like a shoot interview, but it was like some kind of interview. And it's like, he's like a very, very well-spoken individual. And you're kind of, it's just like you can't fathom it in your brain. It's like, what the fuck?
I remember when they inducted George Animal Steele at this Hall of Fame thing, they had like a video, congratulations thing from Bill Murray, who was on, like, location doing a film. He was in Ed Wood also. So.
Oh, yeah.
Says his last appearance was November 15th, 2010, when he made a guest appearance during a Kofi Kingston-David Otunga match.
I don't remember that.
He also served...
like an old school Raw or something?
Yeah, it must have been.
I don't know.
Yeah, he also served as a groomsman for Black Machismo, Jay Lethal, and SoCal Val.
Oh, well, along
with Coco Beware, Kamala, and Jay Robinson.
He ought to be thrown out of the Hall of Fame for going to TNA.
I think they did that because he was kind of like, wasn't he in part of the wedding party of Uncle Elmer? And when Uncle Elmer got married, and Uncle Elmer's wife, Brian, had like a green tongue too.
Not just that, but...
No. Or was that the Vachon wedding?
Might have been with the Vachon. That's when
I'm thinking
the
Vachon wedding.
David
I'm thinking about.
Well, Jay Lethal was doing the Macho Man gimmick, and so when he asked, SoCal Val to marry him, he had to, be there, George Steele, because he was doing the Macho Man gimmick.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. Want to take the next picture?
Ivan Putski, he was a tag team champ with Tito Santana, and he had nice physique. That's it.
he was jacked up, man, for his time.
Yes.
I mean, and he was a short little dude, and he was horrible, and he basically just did body slams and a couple other things. He did the Polish Hammer, and then like after he win, he grabbed the microphone and say, "Polish Power." And he was over. That's for sure.
And his kid slept with Missy Hyatt.
I remember he was in that match with Brian Christopher at that pay-per-view, and he blew his knee out. We never seen him again.
Too bad.
Oh, yeah. And I actually saw Ivan quite a bit, because he was like between the WWF. He'd actually come and wrestle here, because I think he's from San Antonio or lives in San Antonio.
Yeah,
that's
right.
In Southwest, and like I say, he was never great. He was just like, but at the time, he was just so physically impressive because, I mean, he was jacked.
5'8".
Wow, I just remember when they'd be here in Texas, they would do like the feats of strength, and one of the things was to have people come from the audience and like punch them in the stomach. And I remember they had this one like tall redneck dude come up and punch him in the stomach, and then the next week they brought him back out because his hand was all in a cast and he broke his hand punching Putski in the stomach.
That's awesome. Speaking of rednecks, I got to throw a quick shout out to my good buddy, Big Wood. It was his birthday this last week, and happy birthday, pal. He listens every so often. Also, on the Ivan Putski tip, if you go to his Wikipedia page, if you happen to have a picture of Ivan, please send it to them because they don't have anything on him. The poor man.
That's weird. Exactly as he was, you think they would.
Yeah, but they don't. Apparently, he's still alive. It doesn't say anything about him passing away or anything. So
I don't think he was. I don't think he was super old. But yeah, we'll go to the next one. The next one is someone who I'll argue forever that she should be in Dave's Hall of Fame, and it's a travesty that she's not involved in Dave's Hall of Fame, and that's the Fabulous Moolah, who is by far probably the most famous women's wrestler of all time, probably the most important one in the history of pro wrestling, and this champion forever, trained the majority of the girls for like the longest time, and just
and all around just a horrible performer.
She wasn't that bad, dude.
One thing I'll say about women's wrestling now is they don't look like truck drivers no more.
That's true. No,
yeah,
not a lot of blue eyeshadow going around either.
Women wrestlers back then were ugly. Sorry.
Yeah.
But they were.
She was old. She was old when I started watching wrestling.
Yeah. The thing about like those truck driving looking women is like Velvet McIntyre, who was just like an average looking lady, was considered fucking hot as shit next to all those.
Right.
Yeah, if you looked at her, you know, like with 2012 eyes today, she'd probably look like she's on methamphetamines or something.
I'm looking at her right now, and she looks like one of my grandmothers. God rest her soul. Both of them. Debuted in 1949. Good Lord.
She was on a TV show, too, one time. Guess what the job is, or, it was something like you had to pick, like, who was the professional wrestler, and it was, like, your choices of different people, and she was, like, the one.
I'm sorry, I just found, she had to pull out of a movie called Mothers, Jugs, and Speed. It was written by Bill Cosby, because she got sick. That might have been
what
the best thing that ever happened
film?
To her. Mother, Jugs, and Speed.
And Bill Cosby wrote this?
Yes.
That's the weirdest thing I've ever heard.
It says, an illness in the mid-70s meant Ellison, a.k.a. Moolah, had to pull out of the Bill Cosby movie, Mother, Jugs, and Speed.
There you
go.
Cosby, I think like a good family show and pudding pops.
Right. And what Mother's Jugs and Speed all get lumped in together, I have no idea.
It's like a porn category.
It's a fetish movie, yes.
Pretty much, yeah.
Anyway.
And I'll never forget that documentary, The Stick of Dynamite, when they're talking about Diamond Lil. And Moolah's like kind of like acting like we, and Diamond Lil's like 40, 50 years old, and Moolah's talking to her like a little kid. Tell him your name.
Throw a ball across the room that you say fetch.
Basically, you know, tell him your name. Tell him your real name. And she's just making like faces, like she was like a real little kid.
I remember when Vince slept with Mae Young at Moolah's funeral. He must have been very upset.
Okay. Let's move along.
You remember when they brought out all the people that he slept with? They were trying to decide who.
Yes, I remember.
He said it was I had a weak moment, and it was at Moe's funeral. So.
Oh, Lord.
Hey, here's a good one for the white man, the Grand Wizard.
Pat Hill. Inducted by Sergeant Slaughter, by the way. There's a real American for you.
I remember
there was a Grand Wizard on wrestling today.
Oh, go ahead.
If there was a Grand Wizard manager on wrestling today, people would be outraged.
Absolutely.
It's funny because he was the Grand Wizard, but he wore a turban.
Yeah, I didn't know why he didn't have no sheet on his head.
I don't know if it was so much a turban as it was a like an Elks Club lodge hat. You know what I mean?
He had both of them. He wore both of them. I know which one you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, because my grandfather was in like the Afifi Shrine, and he had a hat just like that. I said, I gotta steal that from Grandpa. Anyway.
But, he was a manager, like, when I first started watching wrestling, and then he died just within, like, a year or two later. And he was actually one of the main managers with Freddie Blassie and Lou Albano in the WWF for years. And he also would manage in other places. He went by a different name, and he managed the Sheik in Detroit.
Eddie Creechman. He went as Eddie Creechman and Abdullah Farouk.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah, Abdullah Farouk is the name I remember. But, he was just, I really don't remember a whole lot about him. He was just like, he was kind of like Freddie Blassie. He was very colorful. That's one thing, all the managers back then were very colorful. And I just remember one match that I saw at the Wrestling Gold where it's the Sheik. And I forgot who he beat. But basically, the fans are like almost wanting to riot and pissed off. And the Sheik takes off. But leaves his fucked up opponent in the ring and leaves the Grand Wizard in the ring. And you got all these kids who are just throwing shit at him. I mean, like, whatever they can find, they're throwing at him, and the people are surrounding the ring, and he's just standing in there because he knows not to get the hell out of the ring. And he had to stay in there for like a long time before he got before he got out. It was like he was trapped in there. But that's basically all I really know of him. I mean, do you have any thoughts on the Grand Wizard, Craig, or do you find anything else?
I never saw a thing about him. I can't find anything real. He said he was a radio DJ back in his early days. That's kind of cool. But other than that, passed away in 1983 at the age of 54, which is way too young.
Yeah. So we'll go ahead and go to the next one. You want to take that one, Craig?
Pedro Morales, one of the first people I ever saw, you know, when I started watching wrestling back in the day.
He's pretty much just like, by the time
thanks.
I started watching, he was like, I guess just more or less a jobber to the stars.
Yeah, I actually got to saw when I started watching. He was the Intercontinental Champion. He was the Intercontinental Champion for like a little while, and he was like just right under Backlund, and then he ended up losing to Morocco, I believe, and then from there he just like, I don't want to say he slowly went down the mid card and became the jobber to the stars, but it was a little quicker than that. But yeah, that's basically that what he became, but. He was a big deal. I mean, he was a big draw for it at that, in the 70s and stuff. And he's the one that actually defeated Ivan Koloff for the WWF title. And he actually it was very rare because, they hardly ever had baby faces wrestle each other in any promotion, let alone the WWF. And they actually had a Bruno Sammartino versus Pedro Morales match. That I think it just went to like an hour draw or something, or it went to the draw. But that was like a pretty big match at the time.
75 minutes till curfew, because they used to have the curfew back in New York back then. And they were at Shea Stadium. All the matches had to end at a certain time.
And he's
why not program it in the afternoon so you can have a finish, you dumbasses?
Oh, and that's the one thing about the WWF at the time. They always had those weird rules to keep the champion, like, You know what I mean? The champion could be beat up so bad and bloodied up so bad for you, he's unable to continue, but somehow he wins the match because
title
of that.
Don't change hands.
Yeah.
Says him and Backlund won the tag team titles.
Oh, that's right. They were tag team champions, too.
Yeah, he
was like the first trifecta.
Yeah, he also won
all three championships.
Yeah. He was a heavyweight champion. Let me read this verbatim. In May of 1980, Pedro staged a WWF comeback. He added yet another title to his career on August 9th when he teamed with reigning heavyweight champion Bob Backlund to defeat the tag team title holders, the Wild Samoans, at Showdown at Shea. Backlund and Morales quickly had to forfeit the belts. However, due to a rule stating that no heavyweight champion could also hold a second title at the same time.
They forgot about that when the Ultimate Warrior won both titles.
Yeah, well, it happened.
Well, they did vacate that title.
Oh, that's right. What am I talking about?
So basically, you couldn't hold both titles at the same time. You couldn't be a heavyweight tag team champion and a heavyweight champion all at the same time.
This dickhead, Bob Backlund, chose to get rid of the tag team titles.
Right.
I didn't think about Pedro Morales, fucker.
That what a jerk. So, of course, over the years, there's nothing cooler than to see a wrestler, you know, walking around with more than two belts on. In my opinion.
But I really don't know too much other than like what I remember. But he was okay from what I remember. I don't remember him being anything like super special or anything.
Speaking of not knowing a lot. You want to take the next one there, Ed?
Yeah, the next one I only know is him being a jobber on, like, Primetime and a few stuff, and that's Baron Miguel Cicluna, who was I know he was, like, a tag team champion. And I remember they used to put him over on, as far as the announcers. You know, there was always a couple of jobbers that they always put over, and he was one of them. But I just remember he was a little wacky. But
actually, he was the opponent for Gorilla when Gorilla threw him out of the ring and Muhammad Ali got in there that I talked about a little while ago.
Oh, okay. Yeah, but I mean, I know very, very – I mean, this has to be one of those where Vince told Vince to take care of him, guys, because, I mean, I have no idea about him, to be honest with you.
Yeah, he's a bomb. Let's go to somebody else.
Wow. It says that he delivered papers for the New York Times. It's on his wiki page.
Except they did work for the New York Times.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Well, I'll let you take the next one, Kutcher.
Captain Lou Albano.
Yay,
he
Captain Lou.
Disgusting looking.
Yeah.
I never got the rubber band. It was like the stupidest thing.
My mom used to hate him. She was like, he's so just, you know, disgusting. And so my
he was a big link in getting that rock and wrestling connection going because he was in Cyndi Lauper's video when they met on an airplane, I believe.
On air. They sat by each other on an airplane, and that's where it came. That's crazy.
It was made. We talked a lot about him when he died, so I guess we could save some time and we don't have to go over his whole thing.
What's more interesting
but,
who this person is that inducted him? It says Joe Franklin. I don't know who the fuck that is.
Yeah, me
neither. Yeah, I got nothing.
It says American radio and television person. It must have been somebody famous in the New York market or something.
Hmm.
Yeah,
and it was in 96 when they were in Madison Square Garden and they did, like, the inductions in New York. So I'm guessing this is just, I don't know, just to get some famous dude on there.
Yeah.
And Lou Albano,
quick,
he was the manager
of the tag teams. Like he was like
he had wouldn't he like he managed like I don't know like 15 teams to so many different titles or something.
Yeah, he had like yeah, it was like something like that. And he was also fucking he was also Mario on Super Mario Brothers.
That's right. That was a terrible show.
Yeah.
But he was awesome for doing it. And he was just one of those guys. And he was just one of those guys who was just like, he would get fired all the time because he was a drunk and would piss everybody off. And I think but they always brought him back. And,
he was one of the guys that Vince had to swear that he would never fire when his dad died. And then he got out of line, he fired him because he came in drunk to do promos or something. He was always doing like work with like a muscular dystrophy or something like that. I know he was big in that. He's always working on the charity and stuff like that. So, and I remember
he
got
arrested
at his birthday party.
Oh yeah. So yeah, but we'll go ahead and move on from.
Hey, just a heads up, we're an hour in already, and we're not even close. We should probably run through a few of these.
Jimmy Snook, he was no good. Johnny Rod was okay.
Wow.
Well, Snook was badass. I mean, he was way, way ahead of his time with the
I had no time for
her. The top of the cage, I mean, awesome.
Yeah.
And then, but he's also one of the craziest motherfuckers who ever wrestled, too.
And possibly
when
killed
he slashed that woman in that hotel room and killed her.
That's right. Sorry. Yeah, Jimmy Snuka. The next one on the list is Johnny Rods.
Who was a jobber.
You got Devon Dudley into wrestling. Next.
Next one, Killer Kowalski.
He got Triple H into wrestling. Next.
Triple H and China in wrestling. And we got to mention that Johnny Rods wrestled in the WWF for nearly two decades. That's awesome. That's what qualified him into the Hall of Fame. I can't believe that.
Killer Kowalski, he cut that dude's ear off with the knee drop.
Right.
Yeah. He was actually also in promos, too. But,
Speaking of Johnny Rods, the next one, Pat Patterson.
He's gay. Next.
That was my joke.
Pat Patterson, probably one of the best minds of all time in the business.
Right.
Yeah, and one of the best sellers. He can miss that turnbuckle by about 4 feet and make you think he hit it.
Go back and watch Pat Patterson and Sergeant Slaughter in the street fight at Madison Square Garden.
Oh, that man is freaking awesome.
On that first WWF Hall of Fame DVD that they released, which I wish they would have made all those Hall of Fames like separate, so they could have like just a bunch of matches and stuff instead of including them. But I don't know why they do it to sell the WrestleMania DVDs, but so I'd like to have their own, their own release or something.
We should probably spend time on this next one. It was Vincent J. McMahon.
Don't know him.
Well.
He was the father of Vince McMahon.
Yeah, well, kind of put wrestling on
all this crap.
Thanks.
He even killed wrestling, as most of the old parts would say.
He was double-crossed by his own son.
Yeah. Well, who better? I heard he was blown up in a limo. Anyway. Big John Studd, 2004.
He was fine. I just remember him most for having crappy matches with Andre the Giant. That's about it.
I forget when he had to challenge, like what I talked about when they went to Berlin, he couldn't do it. And then he wrestled Haku or King Kong at the time. And fucking King Kong will fucking body slam him. And he just looked at Big John like, what the fuck is going on?
But it wasn't a regulation body slam challenge, so he didn't get the cash. Andre actually won, and Heenan stole the cash back.
Oh, yeah.
He threw it in the crowd.
Yeah.
But he was just a big dude, you know. Basically, that was it.
I saw one match in Puerto Rico outside with him and Hogan during the rainstorm. Did you ever see that?
Yeah.
Where they were slipping and sliding all over the place. I'd have just gone back to the dressing room.
I got to see Hogan and Studd live actually.
He was one of the big monsters challenging Hogan during that big period when he was the champion.
Yeah.
So he's okay. Not much.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
And next one, Don Morocco, who the beach bum, and he's just one of those guys who was awesome, but didn't really take care of his body when he was younger. When he was awesome, and this was all fat and flabby, and then
the original
he decided to get super jacked up. Yeah, he became on the Rock Morocco because he was just jacked out of his mind.
Yeah.
And he did some of the greatest skits in the history of pro wrestling.
Him and Fuji together when they were like detective agents or whatever. I watched it with Brian and Vince not too long ago and just died watching that. Just unbelievably funny. And Morocco is a horrible actor, which makes it even funnier. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's like he's, you can tell he's totally aware this camera's there filming him. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Breaking down the fourth wall was not a problem. Let's look straight into the camera the whole time. You know?
I don't care what anybody says. I love crap like that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that was awesome. He also he defeated Morales and then he lost to Tito.
That's right.
But he had a good run in as a Intercontinental Champion. And wasn't he the one that started the whole angle with Gordon Solie getting assaulted on Georgia?
That's when Piper turned babyface.
Yeah.
When he was going after Gordon and Piper was trying to hold him back and. Then he hit Piper, and then Piper jumped on him. That's how Piper became babyface.
And then he was gone.
Yes.
And then he's gone.
We'll go ahead and go to the next one, which is Greg the Hammer Valentine, who's looked the same for the past, like, 30 years, hasn't changed one bit.
Yeah.
And can probably still go an hour if he wanted to. And I just remember he had that those forearms that he used to just beat the shit out of people with and stuff.
Very reminiscent of Sheamus when he hits a man with a forearm. Just crack. He hits a man.
Yeah.
His most famous match, probably the dog collar match was Piper.
Yeah. I was just going to bring
that
up.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that. Phenomenal. And I don't even think I've seen the whole thing. I've just seen clips. You know what I mean?
He had a great feud with Tito Santana for their Intercontinental title.
Yeah, wow. Yeah. And then
he and Beefcake were okay as a tag team. I mean, well, Greg was good, but Beefcake keeps. Well,
hey, the Bulldogs got a.
He was.
Bulldogs got a great series of matches out of those two.
Yeah.
That tag team doesn't even compare to the greatness that was Shake, Rattle, and Roll.
Oh, jeez.
I remember that. Rhythm and Blues.
Rhythm and Blues. They dyed his hair black, jet black. He gave him a guitar that he had no idea how to play.
Called him Boxcar Willie.
It's funny, you called him the wrong team, and I knew exactly who you were talking about, though.
Oh, man, that was awesome.
Remember he had the shin guard, and then... Ronnie Garvin hit his own shin guard. He called the Hammer Jammer, and then he put him in the figure four, and Ronnie Garvin's making faces at him and sticking his tongue out because he thinks the Hammer Jammer is blocking the pressure.
Another reason to hate Ronnie Garvin, sticking your tongue out. Come on now.
Man, I bet those two beat the shit out of each other in their matches. That would have been awesome.
They did. I saw a match from Madison Square Garden like late 88 when Garvin first showed up. They beat the piss out of each other. Just slapping the crap the whole time.
It's a shoot, brother.
The next one is Harley Race, and he wasn't in the WWE for long, but
nobody made an impact. I'll tell you what.
It is an impact. He went from being like the NWA multiple time NWA World Champion to being the King.
Yeah. The King.
To brawling in the backstage at the Slammy Awards with Hacksaw Duggan while there was a llama.
You know what? Harley Race, even when he was an old man, even in the WWE, he was fucking awesome, dude.
Oh, yeah.
He took like the first televised table bump.
When I think of King Harley Race, I think of that bump that he takes. Where he gets punched and he flips over the rope, the top rope, and he nails his face on the ring apron on the way down. He did it every match. But it looked so brutal when he did it.
He was an awesome bumper, dude. He was awesome.
Oh, yeah.
And the thing is, I've seen the tape of when he won his first NWA World title, where he had blonde hair. But my God, he still looked like he was 50, 60 years old.
Yeah. That guy's been like the guest of more wrestling shows than probably any other wrestler. You know, somebody will put on a big time wrestling event, and our special guest, Harley Race, sitting at ringside, and there he is, you know. He was just always there.
I would say that behind Ric Flair, he's probably the second greatest NWA World Champion of all time.
Yeah, he was good. I mean, he really. I mean, I'll never forget like the matches he's had with Kerry and David.
Yeah,
he had some awesome matches. He made them. He made Kerry look like $1 million. He made David Von Erich. I mean, he made David Von Erich outside of Texas.
Didn't he like put him down with the claw, like in a non-title match or something?
It was a handicap match. It was supposed to be the only way he'd have a chance is if he had Fritz helping him. So it was him and Fritz, but Fritz never got tagged in because David just went in there and just fucking beat him like in a few minutes and stuff. And that's what, you know, made David and put him in contention for them to think about making him the world champion.
And he managed Lex Luger and Vader to the WCW championship, so.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I never forget, like, in Foley's book, didn't Foley tell a story where, like, Harley was supposed to hit him on the outside and bust it open hard away, and Harley went to go hit him, but Cactus was already bleeding, so Harley got all pissed off.
That sounds familiar. As Contreras just said, Jesse the Body Ventura, Governor.
Yeah.
One of the awesome movie stars. Awesome movie star.
He doesn't have time to bleed. Later of all time.
Yes, he doesn't have time to bleed. Governor of Minnesota in the Predator movie.
What did he just play Governor of Minnesota in the Predator movie?
No, I said he was the governor of Minnesota, and he was in the Predator movie. If there is a movie about the governor of Minnesota, I would sleep through that. He also might seriously have a head injury from all the years of wrestling, because now he has all these conspiracy theories on, and some of them may or may not be true, but my goodness, if I have a story in my head, I don't tell it to the world on the History Channel.
Yeah. He still has in all the movies, he may have like the greatest line of all time when he said, "I ain't got time to bleed in Predator." That's like one of the best lines ever.
He was a sight to see. Remember when he had like his hair was like six different colors, and he was jacked, but he wasn't like super jacked. It was like he was trying to make himself out to be.
When he became the governor of Minnesota, I was like, holy shit.
Yeah.
That's like the one time where like everyone jokes about how like, yeah, what if like everyone gets drunk and like tonight and votes for like the funniest category? It's like, you know, everybody in Minnesota went and got partied and shit and went to go vote and we're like, let's vote for Jesse Ventura. And then the next day everybody was like, holy shit, he won.
He worked a whole state.
Yep.
Unbelievable.
And the greatest heel announcer of all time.
Absolutely. Yeah.
The great thing, I like Jesse and Gorilla because that was one of the things that was special about WrestleMania every year, because that's like the only time you got to hear them together.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Junk Food Dog. Also,
Junkyard Dog. Terry Funk got a good match out of him once in a while. He
wrestled the greatest gimmicks of all time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That Mid-South territory, he was like probably the biggest star of that territory ever had.
He had something on his future.
And just like every other Mid-South star, had a totally different career before he went to like the WWE. Because he was a serious character in Mid-South and doing serious angles. I mean, Jesus Christ, he got blinded and actually had to pretend he was blind and stay home. And I'm sure he didn't mind because the fans were sending him hundreds and hundreds of dollars every day to help support him because he could no longer wrestle because he was blind because of the fever cream. I mean, that must have been an awesome vacation for him, you know?
Grab Them Cakes is a pretty good song.
Grab Them Cakes. Thank you for putting that in my head.
I hated that when they made that because it replaced Another One Bites the Dust.
Next on our list, Sergeant Slaughter, a G.I. Joe figure if there ever was one.
Yeah.
Well, he wasn't. He was one.
I know, that's what I'm saying. That's awesome.
Yeah, you know, I matched with Pat Patterson. You know, people don't think Sergeant Slaughter was ever a good worker. Watch that match with Pat Patterson, and you have a totally different idea because he worked his ass off in that match. He was so damn awesome in that match, getting his ass whipped.
And now you know. And knowing it's half the battle.
And I'm sure he made a lot of money off of that G.I. Joe deal, too.
Oh, yeah.
I wonder if it got remote when he went to with the Iraqis, if G.I. Joe got mad or Hasbro got pissed off.
I'm sure they were.
They should have really capitalized on it and made a, you know, an Afghani sympathizer Sergeant Slaughter and sold that one as a special variant that you could only find in select stores.
Yeah.
Now, we already talked about this next one, Superstar Billy Graham. Because we already talked about Jesse Ventura.
Yeah. I don't like Billy Graham.
He was the best karate dude.
I just think he's a distasteful person, that's all.
I'll never forget that karate gimmick. I mean, because I had heard so much. I had never seen him, but I had read about him in a magazine, heard so much about him, and he had the long blonde hair, and then all of a sudden he's wearing a red gi, and he was master karate. And if you go back and look at his old interviews, he is one of the best interviews of all time.
I'll give him that. He did cut a great promo.
And he told a very horrible, mean-spirited lie about Pat Patterson on the Theo Donahue show.
Was he gay?
I think he's a piece of shit.
Hmm?
2004, the very first man I ever saw wrestle on my TV, Tito Santana.
Yeah, he was always there.
Yeah.
He was always there. He was a good guy to have on the undercard. You know, he could have good matches. So,
yes.
And I'll never forget when him and Tom Zink won the World Tag Team titles. That was awesome.
That's right.
Yeah. And he was the Matador.
That sucked.
Yeah, that sucked.
I know Ed is
screwing with me, but he was in a great tag team called Strikeforce.
That's right. Rick Martel.
That's right. Thank you.
And also with Ivan Putski.
And by the way,
Dumbass quit.
And by the way, the epiphany or the epiphysis of skinny fat.
Well, dude, okay, what the fuck is the definition of skinny fat?
No.
Skinny but still thin and tall and lanky but still has love handles. You know?
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, he was
one of the things they were talking about when they would bring that up.
Yeah. He was also one of the Eastern Championship Wrestling heavyweight champions.
Yeah, he was one of the first ones.
Yeah, before ECW proper came into effect.
Yeah.
Bobby the Brain Heenan.
Bobby the Brain Heenan had the greatest induction speech of all time, and if you haven't seen it, you should go out of your way to see it.
I still watch that every once in a while just because it makes me laugh.
He was awesome. He was on fire that night.
I love Bobby when he would get involved the WrestleMania 2 match with Hogan when he was in the cage with Bundy. He took one bump, and the way he took the bump against the cage and then gigged, just, man, this guy could bump.
He was taking like a lip bump off a right hand from Hulk Hogan.
Oh yeah, yeah. He could bump even later on, and man, he was good. Just everything about him. He's
the greatest. Him and Jim Cornette are number one and number two, the greatest managers of all time.
Yeah. I mean, he made me side. He's the reason I sided with Andre over Hogan. And he was just awesome. But there's no way he could be an announcer today.
Well, obviously not.
Well, obviously not. But I mean, if he was young today, he'd be a little too politically incorrect to be an announcer on TV.
He really did.
I mean, if you really break it down to it, I mean, it's funny. I laugh my ass off, and I don't have no problem with what he ever said. But he just says a pretty racist shit.
Yep.
Yeah.
But that shit's funny, so it's okay.
Yeah. It is.
Yeah.
And Craig, you got the next one?
I do not. I stepped away from my computer for a minute, so.
Pete Rose, who's the first, I guess, celebrity inducted. I like Pete. Pete Rose was good in the WrestleMania appearances. I thought they were really good.
Yeah,
he had a great speech on it.
Killed by Kane every year was awesome.
He had a great speech on that Hall of Fame. You can tell he actually liked being there, like some other people.
Yeah, he was actually pretty good.
He'll never make it into baseball's Hall of Fame for betting on his own team. But
people need to get over shit like that.
He will open up its arms. Come on, we love you. So.
All
right. I love when he cut the promo in Boston when he was a ring announcer and then Kane dropped him on his head. That's some good stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, funny stuff.
Some guy named Hulk Hogan is next.
Oh, that guy's got a new tape out, I've heard.
I know. I heard him see his dingle.
Oh.
Of all the people, I never thought there'd be a sex tape of it. It'd be Hulk Hogan.
Now you got the perverted urge to see it, don't you? I know I do.
Yeah,
I gotta admit.
The morning show in our town actually has seen part of it, and I don't understand the phenomenon with pro wrestlers wearing thong back undies. I understand why they do, but why they tan in them, I don't understand, because apparently when Mr. Hogan takes off his briefs, there's a tan line of a thong back on his backside. I've been
it's bad
tanning.
When I'd rather watch a Hulk Hogan sex tape than a China sex tape.
Right, right, because it's really the same thing when you think about it.
Well, when you have a clitoris that looks like a little dick, it is.
Okay. You see, China's going to do this new gangbang tape with everybody dressed like Hulk Hogan and Triple H and other wrestlers.
I did hear about that.
Yeah,
Hogan.
Hogan. Yeah, he was pretty famous.
Yeah, he's got some credibility to him, not in the ring, but just as a larger-than-life superstar.
Still think he's the biggest star of all time.
Yeah. I mean, my ninth grade yearbook, when you get to do your little quote, mine was Hulkamania will live forever.
Hey, guys, real quick, everyone check out AngryMarks.com. You can always download and stream our show at AngryMarks.com, along with a lot of other shows, like the Angry Marks show and quite a bit of other things. So everyone check out AngryMarks.com.
And we're running quickly out of time. Roddy Piper is from 2005 as well, one of the best heels of all time, in my opinion, and entertaining as heck to watch in the ring, and threatened the life of one Brian Alvarez.
Didn't he take you, took him in the bathroom, turned out the lights, and then he turned on a lighter or something?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah, took him in the dark room and threatened his life.
He thought he was Dave. He thought he was Dave, or he was actually sending the message to Dave is what it was.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Bob Orton
had a broken arm for a very long time.
Yes, he did. I think he still does, actually.
Yeah.
And first one of
Jimmy Hart had a megaphone.
Yes. Mr. Wonderful had a bad arm.
Hey, real quick, I watched some of those internet shits on YouTube.
Uh-huh.
You remember when Mr. Wonderful was going on the losing streak and he was getting inspiration from the guys in the Psychic Network? What the fuck was that shit on his head?
It looked like a styrofoam golf ball.
Was it his wig? Was it his hair?
I have not seen it. I have no idea.
I was more shocked to find out Gary Spivey was like a real person. This whole psychic deal was like something real. You know, he actually was like a psychic. I thought it was just some bullshit character somebody in WCW Creative thought up at the time or something.
That was weird. Nikolai Volkov, he used to sing the Russian national anthem.
And he's a great voice, as we talked about a couple weeks ago. We should stop right here at 2005. The Iron Sheik might be our last one of the evening. Crazy, crazy Iron Sheik on the Howard Stern show. He's going to humble men around the world.
Break their back, fuck their ass.
Break their back, yeah, thank you.
Brian Blair's a faggot for some reason.
Yeah.
Laughed the shit out of him at that roast. If I was Blair, I'd have probably punched him right in the mouth.
All I know is that somehow I was in the same goddamn hotel with him for 2 days last year, and I never ran across him, and the only regret I have from Atlanta.
He cut a promo on me at that NWA show that I told you I went to in Mississippi where they had the Lex Luger-Michael Hayes match.
Uh-huh.
I was booing. He said, look at me, and then he did like the flex, and he said, hot to me.
Him and Nikolai were an awesome tag team back in the day. I loved watching those guys.
In his younger days, he was a pretty good wrestler. You know, like with all the suplexes and stuff.
Yeah.
He was a shooter, dude. That's bullshit about, you know, the Olympics and all that, but he was actually a bad dude in his day. And he was a pretty strong, jacked up dude, in his day. I mean,
and it's a sad state of affairs. He's not in that legend's house. Although I can understand they don't want a death on their hands, so I can understand them not wanting him in there.
I just
and how he wore those curly boots, I'll never know.
I just remember seeing like a shoot interview with Marty Jannetty, and Marty Jannetty talking about they left I guess Sean had to do something, so they left this girl in the Iron Sheik's room or something. And then, like, the Iron Sheik is like, I guess, starts to hit on the girl, but the girl says she's with Marty or whatever. And the Iron Sheik, there's some commotion, and Marty's like, what's going on? And the Iron Sheik starts telling him the story. And she goes, she said something about she's with Marty. I said, fuck Marty Jannetty. No offense, Marty.
Was she a lesbian?
She's a lesbian. Yes.
Lesbian.
See, that shoot interview that apparently everyone ordered but that very few people got is still the greatest shoot interview of all fucking time.
That's why you should all download your shoot interviews on, like, a torrent site because of shit like that. I don't know, Grandy sent me an instant message.
Uh-oh.
This is...
Yeah. She messaged me. I got off work early last week to go to the dentist, and she, you know, she had said something about, you know, our downloads or whatever, and she sent me an instant message and was apologizing to me and said, those boys are lucky to have a guy like you, Craig, blah, 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 and she was apologizing profusely because she had forgotten that I was on this show. I thought that was kind of funny.
Well, I just mentioned that, you know, I'm going to need some cash credits to my F4W account after sitting through that fucking photo contest last night. And
thank you.
And that they could have posted the photos in the thread so everybody could, like, play along at home. And somebody said, we'll just go to her Facebook page. I said, well, I unfriended her. And then she sent me messages saying, but I befriended you first or something. I didn't unfriend her. I was just trying to say something to be a wise ass. And then she
Yeah. We obviously don't know how to use the quote feature on these PMs on the board, because they all got the URLs, you know, like when you're editing, like a post or something, and somebody screws up when they're you know, when they're posting.
Yeah.
Never mind.
I know what you're trying to say.
I didn't
so, like when there's a screwed up link and it just has a link and you can't click on it.
Yeah,
it's somebody,
a frozen link.
That's what it did.
So you gotta, be mad at me too, because she made a Facebook post talking about how like she apologized for like the thing and or whatever, and
yeah.
So and
it was nothing.
And then on the show that she was talking about how it's the worst show ever, so I commented, and I was like, Granny, why do you have to be so negative all the time?
He's more insecure than Ed is.
Okay, stop. So should we do part two next week, or what should we do here? Because we're out of time on the live feed. I mean, we could go for a little while longer. What do you guys want to do?
Let's just pick up next week.
Yeah, we'll start at 2006. We did the Iron Sheik. The next one is 2006, and the first one will be Bret Hart. So,
yeah, that'll work. We'll do that.
That was a great year, too. Bret, Eddie, Sensational Sherry, William Refrigerator Perry.
That's when Stone Cold and Bret Hart snubs Hulk Hogan.
Yeah.
That'll be fun. They'll come back next week.
Dude.
Oh, go ahead.
That they gave him a look like, fuck you, man. We don't need your shit no more.
Right.
You ain't facing me at WrestleMania. You go fuck yourself. That's basically what Steve Austin said.
By the way, right. I have a commitment next week, so you guys are on your own next week. So that'll give you plenty of time to grab somebody else.
So you want to continue the top eight next week. You just don't want to be on the show.
Yeah.
Okay. I see. Maybe I can scrape up Old Faithful, Semper Vivi, maybe you can be on the show or something.
He would have been a good one to have tonight, actually, but that's aside from
the
fact.
We
would have
gone through, like, five people.
That's true. Semper Vivi knows how to talk. A lot.
So what in the heck do you have to do next week that's so important to miss our show?
I have a get-together to go to.
It's probably something with family that he has to go to keep his wife happy.
Thank you. And you hit the nail so hard on the head that you...
he's gonna go sit with Granny at jiu-jitsu, that's what.
I... No. It's an hour out, number one, and number two, I would never do that because I have more important things to do than watch little kids roll around on the ground.
Are you going to let your kid roll around when he gets a little older? You know Brian, I'm sure Brian's already starting to talk you into it.
Oh, yeah. I have no problem with him doing that, but he's five.
Yeah.
He's five, he's almost 3.5 feet tall, and he's 62 pounds already. So
I wouldn't let my child do stuff like that, because then I'd have to go to that stuff and watch.
It's better than going to watch soccer games, Katrir.
I don't know, I'd rather not do any of it. My kid's not going to do any extracurricular stuff.
Okay, don't have children then.
Well, before we go, did you...
I was gonna say TNA's coming in April after I get back from my vacations. And I said, hey, Cameron, you want to go see Impact? And he goes, no. I said, but we've gone before. Remember, we always get to sit in the front row because it's really easy to get tickets. And he's like, yeah, I don't want to go, Dad. And I said, well, we'll go with Brian and Whitney. I don't want to go.
That's just he's not old enough to realize the greatness that is Velvet Sky's ass, so that's why he doesn't want to go yet.
Glad for that, Ed. But yeah, we went to SmackDown, you know, just last week, and he had a ball. But then you bring up going to see Impact, and you'd think he'd be all jacked to go see wrestling.
Well, he's comparing the two. He said, I don't know which one I want to go see from now on.
Right, and at five, he already knows that TNA is not where he wants to go.
No.
Yeah.
Well, tell him now he can't go.
Oh, that's a good idea. Reverse psychology.
Yeah.
Right. I'll try that. Because my wife sure as heck don't want to go, so I'll just end up sitting with Brian and Whitney. And it's awkward when I try to sit between them. So.
Well, I guess we can wrap
tomorrow,
up here anyway.
Tomorrow night, I think me and Sinbad are doing another Pro Wrestling Flashback show. I don't know what the topic is, because he decided to try to call to set up this show while I was doing this show. So I haven't talked to him yet. Which
why don't you get Sinbad to replace me next week?
Because he's horrible.
Well, besides
he knows more than Ed and Craig.
Well, that's for sure.
And I think we had been discussing WCW from 1998, but that's got, like, so depressing because it got so shitty that we're going back and we're discussing WCW from, like, 1990.
Good call.
So we have some fun.
Good call.
Cool.
And also go to youtube.com/user/Cotrere/videos, and I got a bunch of old wrestling stuff up there, a bunch of playlists if anybody wants to check them out.
Oh, sweet.
A bunch of world-class Star Wars shows, Memphis for American Bash 88, Steamboat Flair half-show match from 89, Bret and Owen Hart as heels in Memphis, Vince McMahon as a heel in Memphis, and a bunch of good stuff.
Yeah. And as for me, my last word of the day is I'm going to go have some Five Guys, and I'm talking burgers and fries.
Yeah,
we don't
whatever.
Anything else? Can I go?
The what?
Can I leave?
Can you leave?
Yeah, let's leave.
I'm hungry. I want to go get something to eat.
Yeah, exactly.
Well,
can we stop
ahead. I'm not stopping you.
All right, let's hang up, buddy.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm just having trouble finding the damn theme song. Why is this fucking thing not fucking working? And of course they dropped out here. Oh well, I guess no theme song today, because I cannot get it to play. Sorry, everybody.